This is the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Here's Jeremy Bierenbaum and Mike Herzing.
Welcome to Let's Talk Wheels. This is another edition of your favorite automotive show. I'm Mike Herzing, along with the awesome Jeremy Bierenbaum. Mr. B, how are things in Southern California?
They're doing great. We just had, you know, the summer equinox this week, and so it is light late, and I just think this is the best time to be driving classic cars.
Well, here it's a little bit toasty and dry, so we've had nothing but, we haven't had any rain in about, I don't know, 15 or 18 days, and it's every day is over 100 with about 90% humidity, so oh my gosh, it's so much fun here. as long as you finish what you're doing by 9 o'clock in the morning, you're fine. So all right, folks, every week we're going to give you automotive news, interviews, car reviews, and classic car information from our friends right there at classic.com. That's CLASIQ.com, and they can't spell, but boy, they can do a lot of cool things with cars. So get ready for a fast-paced hour. You can also catch the show as a podcast after it airs on iTunes, Spotify, audioboom.com, sportsmapradio.com, and of course, go to the site right there, the front page of classic.com, C-L-A-S-I-Q once again. But if you subscribe, that way you won't miss a thing, and it makes it so much easier. We sure would appreciate it. That would really help us out a lot. This week, we're going to talk to Jim Browning, who owns a company called Ultimate Headers. They just might have exactly what you need to take care of that car. If you have a classic, they absolutely have exactly what you need. Nice family-owned and operated company, been around for a long time. They make some of the best headers I have ever seen. The way the bends are made and the way the welds are just so nice. And on the podcast, we're going to talk to our old friend Carl Benton from Polymer Dynamics, and he's going to give us some tips on how to fix some inherent problems on some of these old classic car engines and things like that. And you can do that by engine coatings. You know, some oil pumps that fail and certain things that fail with the little engine coatings, things like that, they'll last forever. That makes it kind of easy. So we got a lot of stuff happening today, a lot of fun stuff. We got a lot of news we're going to talk about. Some of it's about some car companies being a little woke and things like that. I know that's a funny word. So it's kind of strange, but Jeremy ought to be used to it in Southern California. So folks, hang on. There's a lot more to come on our news and notes segment, which is coming up next. All of it right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Mike Herzing along with Jeremy Bierenbaum. We'll be right back, folks, right after this.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Here's Jeremy Bierenbaum and Mike Herzing.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. I'm your guy, Mike Herzing, along with the classic car guru himself, Jeremy Bierenbaum from classic.com. This is our news and notes segment where we catch you up on the happenings in the auto industry this week. But Jeremy, real quick, how bad are gas prices in your area?
It hurts. And I actually have a funny story to share with you as well. Right now, the pumps are hovering around $6.30, $6.50 for the cheap stuff. So, it's been tough. And because of that, I've been kind of rotating. I drove my Mini Cooper a little bit, then I drove my truck, and then Grace was gone, so I drove her car. And I was trying to just kind of spread it out so I didn't have to go to the pump. But then I ran into it a day where I had three different cars that all needed gas. And I left for work yesterday kind of in a hurry, forgot my wallet, and I had a 40-mile range to get to and from work, which was 40 miles. And so I was really driving conservative. It was like I made it home, but I barely made it. So I would advise that.
Yeah, that's a little bit of anxiety, isn't it? Little pucker factor of 11 or something like that, would call it.
I called Grace. I said, I'm getting in the canyon. If you don't hear from me in 20 minutes, come with a jury can and just start driving the other direction.
That's hilarious. But, you know, it makes a difference. You know, it's real funny. I went to lunch with the friends from high school. Okay. I hadn't seen him for years. We weren't on the A list in high school. We were on the B or C list. We just did our deal. We weren't jocks or anything like that. We were the motorcycle guys, and we had all these motorcycles lined up at school and things like that. And there weren't big motorcycles at the time, but till senior year, then I had a Honda 750. But you know, our parking lots at school here in Spring Branch at West Houston was there'd be Coronet 440s and 68 Camaros and Firebirds and, you know, this kind of stuff. And one guy had a Charger and he had a 440 with a six pack in it, three carburetors. And he worked at a Goodyear store. So he would put used tires on it and then go to school and burn them off in one morning before school. It would look like a NASCAR after the race win, you know, it was hilarious. But, you know, we were talking, I said, my good friend, Buddy Scott and James Ballard, I went to school with him. And we're talking, we haven't seen each other in 50 years. How about that? We're having a lunch, and I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I still drill a well every once in a while, you know? So that's the difference between California and Texas. You know, we have guys that are semi-retired, but he still drills a couple of oil wells, you know, a year or so, something like that. And I'm running a well up in Louisiana right now. We're doing this and doing that. This is such where I'm at. It's such the oil patch. You know, when I was a kid, oil patch was, you know, 80% of what our whole economy was here in South Texas. But it's changed a lot. We now have medical and then space and things like that. But it's just real funny how we talk about, you know, I still drill a few wells every once in a while, because he is an engineer and did all that stuff and has all these projections and figures out where to drill and how much to drill and how fast to drill and all that kind of stuff. Kind of like the guys on Armageddon, but they don't look as good. But it was great catching up with them, but it's just so different. And I said, well, why don't you drill more? He says, because we don't, you know, our investors don't necessarily, they're worried about the government coming down on us with more regulations and things like that. So why would you want to put your money into it? I went, no, not really. And I've heard that from everybody. If the government would kind of promise them, we're not going to get you with a bunch of regulations and we're going to maybe back off a little of the restrictions they've done, you know, they would drill a whole lot more, bring out a whole lot more. It wouldn't happen overnight. It would take a while, but honest to God, we've got more oil here than Saudi Arabia and all those other guys. If we would just, they would just let us get it. And granted, we get it a whole lot cleaner than they do.
Yeah.
And we're not having,
and we'd get it quicker. We wouldn't have to transport it. There's a lot of positives to it. So
absolutely. And there's not putting it on a ship where it belches out all kinds of nasty stuff. And those ships pollute more than the oil wells do. And that makes it a little tough, but fuel here is around $4.50.
Okay. And that's probably higher than it's been in a very long time.
How about ever? You know, so it's pretty brutal. People are really mad. All the pumps say, with the stickers that say, I did that, with a picture of Biden and all that. So, I mean, every other pump will have that on that somebody put on there. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, we're seeing that out here too. And of course, it's the summertime, and this is when people are traveling and prices are going up in general. So sometimes you just kind of got to bite the bullet. The bigger thing is when you pull up to a gas station that you found because it's a little bit cheaper and there's a line down the street and you're like, okay, I'm not the only one trying to do this today.
People go to Costco or they'll go to Sam's Club or Walmart or something, and they'll find out as they sit there idling, waiting in line, all the extra savings that they have on the fuel is out the window because they sat there for 30 minutes idling in gear, you know, or just in park waiting on the pump. So there's a big difference. But also, I talked to a lady that has a electric car. Okay, she has a Mach-E that she bought. Her and her husband bought. They used to have a Nissan Leaf, and they got rid of it, and they got a Mach-E finally. They ordered it. Finally came in about a year later, and they were talking about broken EV chargers. And she said that's a huge thing for them. Last week we talked about 23% or 24%, basically a quarter of all the chargers are broken at one time or another. And it's usually a software issue or something like that. And she said it's absolutely true. And
yeah,
that's a lot of problems.
There was a Motor Trend writer on Instagram that was kind of going off the other day. He just got a new Rivian and was having a really tough time going to multiple chargers, not being able to get them to work, and just issues with Charge America. And so, you know, it's tough. It's, there's some hurdles we still need to come over. I mean, right now we got a letter in the mail that said me personally, but in general, we need to watch our electricity use. So it's tough when they're pushing people to go to electric cars and that's the way you're supposed to charge them. And then they say, hey, you got to watch your electricity use as well.
You know, you're exactly right. Same thing. We've gotten that too. You know, by the way, you kind of cut down on your electricity use as much as you can. Maybe move the thermostat up a degree or two and try to help the electrical grid. Okay, fine, because it's record demand because of the heat we're having right now, heat wave. And I'm like, okay, now you want to bring in gazillion electric cars? Come on.
Right.
It's not going to work. The grid won't work, you know, do on this. So, you know, one, the government tells us one thing and then they tell us another thing. So,
yeah. I mean, I have my electric charger. It's set to, it starts charging at the off hours. So I think around like 10 PM is when it kicks on. And, you know, you should be able to get through the whole night of charging, and charge your car up.
But you have a hybrid that's not released. If you didn't charge it that day, it's not going to kill you.
Correct. You can,
okay. All right. Now, speaking of thing about Mach-E, they have a recall, don't they?
Yeah, there's a possible recall. They're talking about Ford has said to temporarily halt deliveries in the Mach-E over a potential safety concern, is trying to fortify position and figure out what's going on. This is including Mach-Es from 2021 and 2022 that were made in the Mexico plant. I'm trying to.
It's something on connection at the battery.
Yeah, it's a connection at the battery connector for the voltage main, which could cause the vehicle to lose power while in motion or fail to start.
That's not exactly a good thing.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to check with, if you got a Mach-E, folks, check with Ford and see if they want you to do anything. Or if not, they're going to do probably an over-the-air update. A lot of these problems is these cars, when they go to charge them, the batteries just get hot. And that causes problems over time. You know, everything gets brittle and deteriorates because of the heat. And so they're charging them slower, or they're charging them to 80% pretty fast. And then that last 20, it's pretty slow. And, you know, the new batteries coming out that are solid state and all that won't be that way. They're going to be dramatically better. And that's going to make a big difference. It really will, folks. I mean, they're going to last longer. They'll be less expensive and that, but we're about 3-4 years away from that. That's the problem. Now, speaking of woke, this is kind of a little bit of something we had to think about. Ford has come out with a Ranger for some big day in Europe, and they're calling it the Gay Ranger. And I got about a minute to talk about this. What do you think about it?
I think that's kind of trolling some of the people that called the paint scheme on it, get quote unquote gay. But Ford is actually using it as a tool to open up and get people in the auto industry to talk about inclusion. I think it's cool. Why not? Either way, you're going to burn some people, but, I always think the talk is worth it. Right.
I don't know. That's different. You're in California, I'm in Texas, but to me, I can only piss off a percentage of the company, but you know, it's all has to do with Goodwood, Festival of Speed that they have every year. And they're going to show this vehicle there, and it's in all the rainbow colors. And it says, this isn't the very first Gay Ranger to exist. It sounds like a TV series, but, either way, but, this was something, and it says a very gay Raptor, redefining tough. And I was like, okay, I just don't think companies ought to just jump in that. I really don't. Maybe some people think that companies need to champion this or that. But to be honest with you, I think you'd be better off just staying back and just being neutral. This is what I try to do. I have no problems with any type of people on either side. I just have to have trouble with extremists on either side. So I just kind of like, I'd be better off leaving it alone. You know,
yeah,
just kind of be cool with it. But to me, it's a race and it's all about classic cars and things like that. And it's going to take away from the race because of all this controversy and say, shouldn't do that either way. That's my opinion. So, all right. We got a lot of stuff happening. Folks, by the way, if you have any opinion on that, Jeremy@classic.com, CLASIQ.com. Or you can find us on Facebook and comment. That'd be great. We'd love to hear from you either way. And don't be mean or rude. That's either way. I'll be sure appreciate that. Folks, you're listening to Let's Talk Wheels with Mike Herzing and Jeremy Bierenbaum right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. We're coming up with our car review segment in just a second. I think you're going to like it. I've got another Infiniti QX60. This one's a different trim level, and I absolutely loved it. We're going to talk a little bit about engine codes if we have time. We're running out of time already. But all right, we'll be right back after this short break. Mike Herzing, Jeremy Bierenbaum, right here on Let's Talk Wheels.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Here's Jeremy Bierenbaum and Mike Herzing.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. Mike Herzing along with Jeremy Bierenbaum. All right, folks, this is our car review segment. And this week, I'm going to talk about a 2022 Infiniti QX60. Now, I had one of these, a few weeks ago, and I loved it, of course. That one was the sensory version, all-wheel drive. The one I have is a lot less money, and it's called the Lux version. They have several trim levels. The main trim levels are Pure, Lux, Sensory, and Autograph, starting at a little over $47,000, all the way up until $61,000. So that's base. We can always add on to that, folks. But think of this as a 7-passenger, nice and big SUV. Okay, this is the cousin of the Nissan Pathfinder. 3 rows, nice, just. This is, if you're looking at a Grand Cherokee or you're looking at a Volvo XC90, you're looking at maybe a Genesis GV80, X5 BMW. Let's see, what else would be a GMC Terrain? This would be a competitor to it, or maybe a Lincoln Aviator. Great vehicle. They've changed them. If you haven't looked at one the last couple of years, they changed them a year or two ago. It's actually all new for the 2022. Take that back. It's not a year or two ago. It's right now. It really went upscale. It went bigger. It went nicer. I never really was a huge fan of the QX60, but I am now. It is awesome. 295 horsepower, 3.5 liter V6. It does not have a CVT transmission. You know, that's the best part.
That's Mike's least favorite kind of transmission.
Least favorite transmission. It's got a 9-speed transmission. You can get it to where it'll tow up to 6,000 pounds. You know, it's got everything. It's got every safety feature in the world. They call it their version of it's called ProPilot Assist. It's, you know, front and rear parking sensors, the round view cameras help you park. It'll park for you if you can't park worth a darn. Traffic sign recognition, steering wheel or, you know, a speed limit assist. It'll keep you in the lane. It'll keep you from hit the brakes if you don't see somebody pulling in front of you, and it'll keep you, if somebody walks in front of you, it'll stop you from that. If you're backing up and you're going to hit something, it'll keep you from doing that. It just, these new cars sure keep people from doing stupid things. And
they at least try to. Last time I was in Houston, you picked me up in the older version of this, the QX60, and I loved it. The new redesign on this is gorgeous. I feel like the back end looks very almost Range Rover-esque.
You know, it does. And open it up, and you fillet the third row seat down, because I don't think you use it a whole lot. You're not going to use it a cape, but every once in a while you may need the extra space for small people. It's really nice. This thing, not only does it have an awesome, you know, audio system, usually it's 16, 17 speakers or something like that, but it's just a quiet on the highway. I mean, and it says it gets 25 miles per gallon on the highway. I think I got like 24. And the problem you have is it's so quiet, it's so comfortable, and you're listening to stereo, and you look down, you're doing 90, and you're going, oh, shit. You know, of course, in Texas, doing 90 means that you're not passing anybody. You're just keeping up with traffic.
I
was following a state trooper, and he was doing 85. Speed limit was 75. He's doing 85 or 88. So I was just kind of following about 5 cars back from him, and we're all cruising along. And I'm looking down, and we're doing 90 miles an hour, and it's like, whoops. But they're not going to even pull you over here most of the time for that. But it's nice. It's got a couple features, like if the speed limit drops, you can set it up to where if you're on cruise control, the adaptive cruise control, and if speed limit drops, it'll actually drop for you. So you won't be caught in one of those little towns that give you the crazy tickets for this kind of stuff. This one had had some extra packages on it, but basically the Sentry version is one of the higher end ones. The Lux has the massaging seats and things like that. The Lux version, which is kind of just one step down from that, which is about $4,000, $3,800, $4,000. Doesn't have the massaging seats. It has the heated and cooled seats and things like that. It may not have the quite as many of the features like the wireless charging and things like that. This one didn't have all wheel drive. But, you know, you save a lot of money. And for some people, there are people out there that don't want every single thing the car has. Some people want every single thing. They're you know, early adopters, and you and I are really not early adopters, Jeremy. I mean,
no,
you're happy with
not.
Your old stuff, and there are people out there that every, like Matt Peralt, my the guy that comes on the show, and I did the show with so many years, and Matt's an early adopter. He wants everything new and latest and greatest, and that's why he leases, and every couple of years he'll get a new car because he wants all the latest and greatest stuff. Some of us just want, sometimes they think, you know, if it works, I'll go. This new to redesign on Infiniti, it drives good. It handles good. It feels good. The seats, you know, Nissan still makes these zero gravity seats. They're just, you get out of, you're in the car for 2 hours and you get out and you're not, you know, trying to get the kinks out. It's just comfortable. Infiniti's fun to drive versus some of the other luxury brands are not. They're just, you know, transportation. And to me, Lexus is that way, you know.
I would say this is probably one of the biggest SUV segments around. And as a lot of the brands are going to a lot of these big touch screens, I really appreciate what Infiniti has done here. You have your screen in front of you that does your display between the wheel. You have your nice display screen that shows your maps and everything. But you still have your tactical buttons that you can touch with your fingers for the AC, shifting right. for drive modes and all that, which is really nice. A lot of companies are now going to all these, like, you know, touch button screens, which I don't appreciate as much.
No, you're right. And I get these press cars, and usually they're early production models, and journalists have beat the hell out of them. I mean, these things have been off-roaded. They've been this, they've been that, they've been mudded. They're just thrashed. And this thing has fit and finish is perfect. It has no squeaks. It has no rattles, you know, and you could back up 10 years and that wouldn't that way. They're just built really well. It's everything you'd expect. They are fun to drive, kind of engaging, which is nice. Safety rating, they're all great. You know, I mean, they're all these cars are, nobody makes a bad car nowadays. It's just what you like. This one has a great looking interior, a screen in the center that doesn't just take up the world. It doesn't take up all your attention. The dash is set up really nice. The gauges are set up nice. You can adjust them and move them around. All of the other things like that are pretty handy. So folks, check out the 2022 Infiniti QX60, because I know you're going to love it, because I do too. I mean, it's just a great car. And if you don't want to spend quite that much money, you can get the Nissan Pathfinder. That's a great vehicle too. And thank you. So we're going to talk a little bit, Jeremy, about engine codes. People have check engine lights and things like that. And I get more and more people that say, I got this code and I replaced this sensor and it didn't fix it. Guys, I mean, you got to understand, when it throws a code and it says, you know, oxygen sensor, well, it might be the heater of the oxygen sensor. It might be. Oxygen sensors don't go bad very often. But it also could be that the oxygen sensor is just out of range, which means that you have a misfire causing it to run too rich. That makes oxygen sensor kind of freak out a little bit and tells the computer there's something wrong, turns on the light. You could have a thermostat that's opening too soon or too slow. That'll cause a problem.
So basically what you're saying is we shouldn't be jumping to conclusions if we put a little OBD2 scanner on our car and it says it's X. It might not be X. It's something related to X. So you're saying we need to check a little bit further into the systems and what's involved.
Absolutely. You got to look at a scanner. People aren't using scanners. They're using code readers.
Right.
They'll go to the auto parts store. They know nothing about stuff. And then to exacerbate it, they end up with replacing parts with parts that are low quality. Even if they did fix it, they wouldn't know. I've had people that keep having to replace catalytic converters and oxygen sensors, and they keep throwing money at it, and all it was the thermostat open and slow. Sometimes I've had somebody that didn't change their spark plugs quick enough, and it caused RF problem, radio frequency. I've had people that didn't gap their spark plugs, and it was caused a problem.
So what do you recommend as the best way to
have somebody that knows what they're doing take a quick look at it at the data
sheet? Okay.
We got to run out of time, folks. We've got all kinds of stuff happening. We're going to talk to Jim Browning from Ultimate Headers. There we go. I kind of forgot about that right now. So be coming up right after this, right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Be right back after the break.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Here's Jeremy Bierenbaum and Mike Herzing.
Welcome
Welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. I'm your host, Mike Herzing, along with the awesome Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com. Folks, this week, we're going to talk to Jim Browning. He's a great guy, and he comes well-recommended. He's from a company called Ultimate Headers. As a matter of fact, he runs it, and I think he owns it. So there's no more better thing than that, than to own a company that is so cool like Ultimate. So, Jim, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels.
Thank you. I appreciate the invite, and look forward to chatting with your listeners or telling a little bit about our story here at Ultimate Headers.
All right. First of all, you guys are in Ohio, outside of Cleveland, and nice small company, but you make some of the best looking headers I have ever seen. So how in the heck did y'all start in this business?
Well, I got to probably share a little bit of our story. My father is the founder of the company. He's still the owner of the company. He is now 84 years old, but my father's career goes back quite a ways. He goes back to the Mr. Gasket days. He's always been an entrepreneur, inventive. And we had another company that started in the marine industry building exhaust systems for the stern drive boats. And then in 97, we bought a C5 Corvette, and that company, Corsa Performance, is the leader in late model exhaust systems. Our claim to fame back then was no interior drone, you know, at cruising speeds. And that company, that changed hands at the end of 2008. And at 75 years old, my father said, I still want to build headers. And that was always something we wanted to do under the Corsa brand. But so Ultimate Headers started in 2012 and started shipping our first headers in 2013. Dad had an idea for, didn't want to start a header company and it'd be just like everybody else. So what really makes Ultimate Headers different from our competitors out there is we have a patent on our investment cast stainless steel flanges. We also have an investment cast tight radius elbow that we use in the design and manufacturing of our headers. And then our material is also very different. It is stainless, but it's made from 321. 321 stainless steel is 50% stronger than 304 stainless steel, which is used commonly in the header marketplace. It's not a bad material, but 321 is 50% stronger at 900 degrees. Mm. So thermal fatigue, thermal cracking, it's just don't have any of those issues. And because of careful engineering, the right materials, we offer a lifetime warranty on our headers. You're just not going to hurt them. You're just not going to break them, you know, out there. So,
wow, that's super cool.
Yeah. So again, if you're going to start something from scratch in an industry that's been around for 80 years, how do we make ourselves different? And it was with the flanges, the materials, and all that. And no, I don't know if I kind of coined the term boutique header manufacturer, and that's where I consider us. You know, I'm not building headers for everything out there and have all these different applications. We started in the LS swap world, and now, you know, for the GM LS engines, the second gen version of that, the LT engines, we do a little bit of big block Chevy, small block Chevy, and then we also do the Ford Coyote engine, the new brand new Ford Godzilla engine, and some Windsor stuff, and just going to start dipping our toe in the water with the third gen Hemi engines. So kind of fun being small. There's always something new to engineer and help customers with.
Yeah. Do you end up getting a lot of customers that hear about your product from reputation and say, hey, when are you going to make it for this motor, and kind of pushing you to get new ones made?
And that's kind of happened with this Hellcat stuff. So our bread and butter customers are guys building resto mod, you know, Corvettes, Camaros, Chevelles, Tri-5s, you know, that kind of stuff. And now, because of the popularity and quite frankly, that third gen Mopar Hellcat type engine, the 6.4, 6.2 Hemis,
you know, they make a lot of power, and you haven't seen a lot of Chargers and different Mopars out there on custom chassis, but there are a few of these chassis guys that are now building them and then putting third gen motors in them. And then we're going to have a header for those applications as well.
Wow.
So, you know, the, maybe a guy's done a couple of Camaros and Corvettes. Well, now he wants to build himself a 70 Charger. Roadster Shop is one of our customers. So that's what we have coming here in the next week or so, is a 70 Charger on a Roadster Shop fast track chassis that will have this third gen Hemi motor in it. And we'll design and engineer a bolt-in header for that. And that'll be the stepping stone that'll lead to other applications as well.
That is so cool. Folks, we're talking to Jim Browning from Ultimate Headers. Jim, you know, what's funny thing is people will buy these headers. I bought them before years ago, and I get them, and they're just so crude. And I look at them, and it'll say made in China or made in Taiwan. And I'm just like, and they don't bolt down right. The gaskets blow out and things like that. And from what I've talked to people and things like that, yours don't do that. But yours are built in-house?
We build everything in-house. We've got a crew of about 15, 18 guys right now. Everything is all hand TIG welded. So, you know, it starts with careful design, careful engineering, proper fixtures. I've told my employees many, many times, I will never ask you to rush something and hurry it up so we can ship it out the door. That is the last thing that we want to do, is compromise quality, you know, for the sake of, you know, it landing on the UPS truck in time. But we want to make sure that what we build is a very high quality part, that when they take it out of the box, they're like, wow, that is really cool. You know, the look of the flange, everything just got to be right. You know, I don't want to be another Me Too header company.
These are, they're like little pieces of jewels that you add to the motor of your car, you know, and a lot of times you see these classic cars, and I'm in the classic car world, and people open up their hood and they got, you know, a bunch of money dropped onto their motor, and they're running stock exhaust manifolds or something like that. And to me, the headers, especially when you get some nice ones like yours, they really set off the car. Not even talking about performance and the way the motor runs, which is going to be better, but just on looks alone. One of the questions I did have, though, is because you're saying the material you guys use dissipates heat a lot easier, is that you're saying that the headers don't need to be ceramic coated?
No, it's not that they dissipate heat any better. It's just the chemistry of 321 handles the heat much better. It's just stronger under those extreme conditions or high temperature type conditions, where 304 will fatigue or crack. The 321 will not do that. 321 was developed during the Second World War for the aircraft, where they were having some failures. So that material helped the airplane stay in the air longer and not have any failures out there and crash an airplane. So the 321 is, again, much, much stronger. You know, when it's extreme temperature versus, you know, the smaller different grades of stainless.
Yeah.
So coatings, you can still ceramic coat the 321, and it does a great job at, you know, the coatings will keep the heat in the header instead of heating up the motor compartment. That's still the same scenario. It's just the 321 is just that much stronger under extreme temperatures.
Gotcha. There we go. That's because a lot of materials, I did a little research on this years ago, but a lot of materials are great when it's cold, but when you heat it up, one works so much better than the other at extreme temperatures. And
correct.
So that's what you're saying about 321 versus 304. They're both great when the engine's cold, but when the engine heats up and it's really hot, the 321 is so much tougher, right?
Yes. Yeah, so you'll see, you know, guys building out turbo manifolds or turbo headers, they'll want to use 321 because turbos just elevate that temperature that much sooner in that extreme condition. Where that's where the 321 will really shine, or real high RPM, high horsepower stuff, where your exhaust gas temperatures are, again, get up there quickly. is where the 321 really shines. So,
yeah, I've known that a lot of times with these later model engines. I mean, years ago, an engine that was running 230 degrees in the 80s or 70s, it would be melting down 240 degrees, and now it's just normal. And
right.
I don't know that I'll ever get used to that, but or thermostats that don't open till over 200, which is nuts. But you guys have to build them for those extreme temperatures, don't you?
Yep, we sure do. Yep.
That's really cool. Do you guys do anything with turbo applications, or is it just straight?
We started to do some turbo stuff with a few people. We've got a little LS and LT manifold header that can be used either like a forward facing up or forward facing down. And then it would allow somebody to build a single turbo application or a twin turbo application. We showed at the PRI show last December some forward facing headers for the Ford Godzilla, the new 7.3 Godzilla engine. So, you know, I'm trying to maybe create product that somebody doesn't need today, but we'll have it ready for them tomorrow.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening and they're really curious about possibly getting a set of headers or talking to you guys, they would go to ultimateheader.com. That's correct?
That's correct. Or they can just even shoot us an email at sales@ultimateheaders.com or just reach us by phone. I love it when customers pick up a phone and let's have a real conversation, because, you know, just through this, you'll learn so much more about having a live conversation than you will through emails and reading something on a website. So I'm all about that personal touch and, you know, let's have a conversation and figure it out for somebody.
You know, a lot of people will just go on eBay and look at some cheapest price and go, well, it looks pretty good in the picture. And then when they get it and it heats up and the gaskets blow out and you've got a problem, here you are with this gorgeous car that you spent so much time with, whether it's a friend of mine had that problem with a Cobra Kit car. And spent all this money and all these hours and hours and hours, and a couple of things he bought were made in China, and I hate to say that, but I mean, but it's, and they were pretty good priced, but not that good considering all the times he's had to take it off and take it apart and fix it again. It's just not worth it. So being able to find somebody like you is the best thing in the long run. So it's focus ultimateheaders with an S.com. Okay.
That's correct.
That would make a big difference. You know, you can look up there, you can find their phone number. They're in Ohio. If you look up Ultimate Headers, you'll be able to find them. And tell you what, Jim, you have really got some stuff, but I need to ask you a favor.
Sure.
Is there a chance you could come back on in maybe 6 or 8 weeks and kind of continue this conversation? Because I know I'll get a lot of emails about it.
Certainly. I'd be happy to come back again and chat with you guys and answer questions for your listeners.
Well, Jim Browning, ultimateheaders.com. Jeremy, anything real quick on closing? We got about
30
seconds.
No, this is just super cool, really high quality product. I've heard about you guys, so it's really cool to talk to you and see the proof in the pudding, you know, where it comes from.
Sure, anytime.
All right, folks, that was Jim Browning from ultimateheaders.com. After this short break, we'll be right back with more Let's Talk Wheels right here on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Be right back after the break.
You're listening to the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network. Here's Jeremy Bierenbaum and Mike Herzing.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. I'm your host, Mike Herzing, along with the awesome Jeremy Bierenbaum. Tell you what, that was fun talking to Jim Browning. I learned a lot about stainless steel, believe it or not.
Yeah, seriously, I didn't really realize that.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, on our podcast segment today, we're going to talk to Carl Benton. Great guy. We've talked to him several times on the show. He has a company called Polymer Dynamics, otherwise known as Polydyne. They sell a pour-in product called TX7, but they also do engine coatings. And that's how I've known him for years. And Carl tells a story about being with working with NASA and things like that. And that's how he learned about engine coatings. But he's going to talk to us about some of the inherent problems with some classic cars, you know, for example, oil pumps and main bearings and rod bearings and pistons and things like that, and how you can have them coated when you're going back with your construction, solve a lot of problems. And that makes it really a big difference. Basically, you can redesign the car so they work better. Nothing better than that, you know?
So, especially when you're doing a rebuild, you really do it right.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, you can do it right. And then that'll help the value of the actual vehicle. So that'll be interesting. So hang on for that one. And then Matt Perrault, our former co-host here, and he is host of the Bostonian versus the book. He'll have an extra car review for the podcast. That'll be kind of fun. You can always catch the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, SportsMapRadio.com, and of course, Classic.com, C-L-A-S-I-Q, as I always say. That way you get to hear the bonus segment. But if you subscribe, then you don't have to worry about that. It just comes to your phone or your tablet or your laptop or your desktop. And every day, every time, every week, you get a brand new one. They have, and if you just have nothing to do and you want to have fun sitting out in the garage, you're working on something, you can listen. We have over 300 episodes up there right now. So that'll be kind of fun. And you can find us on Facebook. That's how we really like to talk to you. So if you have any questions or anything like that, you can email me, Mike@letstalkwheels.com, Jeremy@classic.com. Once again, CLASIQ.com. So Jeremy, that was lots of fun. And now let's go to the podcast. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Carl again. He's got so many fun stories every time we chat.
Absolutely. On behalf of Jeremy Berenbaum, our producer Sean Mapes, and myself, I want to thank everybody for joining us today on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network, and we'll be back. I'm Mike Herzing. Talk to you next week, folks. Welcome, everybody, to Let's Talk Wheels Classic Car segment. All right, folks, this week we're going to talk to Carl Benton, our old friend from Polymer Dynamics, otherwise known as Polydyne. We're going to talk about some of the inherent problems that a lot of classic cars have that I have found and a lot of my friends have found through Carl, of ways to get around this stuff. So Carl, welcome back, and tell the folks a little bit about Polydyne and how you started it.
Well, appreciate you having me again. Polydyne really got started by accident. A good friend of mine asked me if I would go to Cape Canaveral and help NASA with the spraying of these polymer dry film lubricant coatings, because they were approaching it like they were painting a car and putting on massive amounts of material, which these materials don't lend themselves to that approach whatsoever. They want to be extremely thin film. And I went there, saw what they were doing, realized right quick they didn't understand the term atomization at all. Went over to Titusville, went to a hobby shop, got a real unique, cheap airbrush. We still use them today because they're so good. And applied the coating on some parts for them, baked them, and afterwards they checked the dry film thickness, and they couldn't believe that we had got it as thin as what they were trying to target. And so we did some more parts. In fact, I did all the parts they had in the next couple of days. And when it was all over with, I'm heading to the airport. Project manager's taking me to the airport to come back to Houston, and he said, you know you're not getting paid for this. I said, yeah, this is a volunteer deal. And he goes, well, let me give you our R&D manual on coatings. And I could not believe he did that. And the information was so concise, so in-depth, so complete. And a division of our military called the Redstone Arsenal, which is nothing but a huge testing lab for anything that any of the armed forces want to prove the value of. They did all the testing. They proved all the theories. And so we abide by their results because if you deviate, you don't get the performance values when it comes to applying these performance coatings. And that was really how Polydyne got started. And as we went along doing a lot of different types of race car stuff, like A.J. Foyt's Indy cars and Rusty Wallace's NASCAR deal, a bunch of high name profile people, which was a lot of fun. I realized that not everybody's going to tear their motor apart or tear their car apart so they could bring it to me to get it coated. And because of a request by a real famous drag racer out of Dallas, Texas, Raymond Beadle, who owned the Blue Max Funny Car. He got the first ever Mobile One sponsorship, and it has a defect that the NASCAR guys found to be kind of sad, but because of the lack of paraffins in the synthetic blend, solid electric cam shafts would go flat and not what I'd call acceptable. And they realized that something needed to be done. And Beetle went to Mobile and told them, we got to fix this. And they said, well, get with that polymer guy in Houston. He'll make you something you can dump into the oil and they'll take care of it. And that was the last thing I wanted to do. But since Raymond was ridiculously persuasive, myself, a couple of Mobile chemists and a good friend of mine at A&M, we got to work. And in about 6 months, we came up with TX7, and it actually surpassed some of the ideas that we had. And we even got an improved version now, which you're talking about older cars. Well, the improved version is really designed for motors that's got 75,000 miles or more. And it has a unique ingredient added to it that helps put pliability back into the seals. And a lot of times motors with a lot of miles on them, the seals get hard. And when they don't function as they need to, then you start developing oil consumption. I mean, you start an old car up in the morning, it's got a puffing white smoke until things warm up and metal expands. And hopefully the seals start dragging the oil off the valve stems. But you've got rear main seals that can get hard and then they'll not function correctly and you'll have a leak and stuff. So we decided to make the high mileage and wow, it has surpassed some of the values that I was hoping to attain. We've really had some major success. So there's one thing for the classic cars. And another one that we do all the time. You got a classic car, nice looking engine bay. You get it all nice and clean. Might even repaint the valve covers or something, really spiff it up. But mm-hmm. The exhaust manifold is a rusty mess.
Right. I see that all the time. We were just talking earlier when we were talking to Jim Browning about how I see all these cars all the time. The guys put a ton of money into their car and the exhaust manifolds are sometimes the last afterthought. And, you know, yeah. You got a beautiful motor and then stock exhaust manifolds.
Yeah.
And most of the time, like you said, they're cast, they're rusty, they don't look good.
Yeah. And the cast manifolds, even though you see the surface rust, they actually have what's called intergranular corrosion because cast is not a real solid structure. So it's ingrained through the metal. And it took me a while to figure out how to kill it. And we actually worked with Rust-Oleum, and they developed a real unique high temperature ceramic primer. You can actually buy it at Home Depot, but we love using it when we blast everything, especially exhaust, to white metal. And we want to block and stop the corrosion from coming up underneath the coating. So we'll okay. put the primer on, which has worked wonders. Then we put our ceramic coating on, depending on whether it's the titanium or the cast iron or flat black or silver, whatever color ceramic our customer is, it's his thing. He makes the decision. And we just absolutely haven't heard of any rust issues, especially after a couple of years. And usually, sometimes it'll take that long before the intergranular corrosion. And when you're living in a town like Houston, we have humidity up the kazoo, up in Oregon, lots of humidity. I mean, the coastal areas, lots of humidity. So a lot of humidity combined with oxygen, and you have terrible oxidation or rust. And
especially when you have that engine compartment that's heating up all the time and it's creating even more humidity inside there.
Yeah. I've actually seen motors where the guy started the motor up in the garage. He's got the garage door open, so the exhaust is getting out. And after he's done whatever he's done, he shut the motor off, he closed the garage door, and actually the motor starts sweating.
Yep, I've seen that.
enough humidity to pull that moisture and condense it on the parts. That's terrible, quite honestly. But it happens all the time.
Yeah, yeah, it does. But, you know, I started using you years and years ago. I guess it was the late 80s. And when I was doing transmissions for motorcycles, racers, race bikes, and I used it on the gears and things like that. Everything would shift better. I could use your coatings on pistons. They would last longer. But there are inherent problems with classic cars. I mean, back then we weren't putting out the horsepower we're putting out of them now. Somebody will take a crate motor and they'll do some things to it. And they'll put an LS motor, but the rest of the drivetrain is stock. And maybe the differentials won't hold up. Maybe you've got a problem if it's four-wheel drive with a transfer case. I can take it apart and send parts to you, and you guys can code them. And those parts will last. They'll hold up to the horsepower. Isn't that true?
And it's a combination. It's not just the coating, but it's a combination of our preparation. And all the ferrous materials, of course, all the gears are going to be a ferrous material, go through a manganese phosphate conversion bath, and that is actually creating a mechanical sponge on the surface of the metal. So the coatings don't just lay on the surface. They actually ingrain themselves in the metal. So you've got a permanently lubricated part, and then if there's primary lubrication, such as the gear lube available, this coating attracts oil to itself. So it's acting as an anti-galling material, anti-wear material, but it also enhances the ability of the gear lube, and it doesn't matter how hot you get the gears, but it stays in place, so the hydrostatic layer of petroleum products does its job.
So if I'm building a motor and I'm going to send you some parts, we're going to have a conversation. How do we figure out what parts I should send you and what needs to be coded? Is that just a conversation and what
sure.
the specifics of what I want to do to the car are?
I get that asked all the time. And quite honestly, there's two components you want to look at first, and that's piston bearings, all the engine bearings. And why? Well, something I've learned over the years, y'all want to always want to coat the softer of the two working surfaces because it's what's going to deteriorate first. And if you've got a coated bearing in a motor, and let's just say you have some oil starvation for who knows what reason, but you catch it, you'll never spin a bearing. And then coating the piston skirts, they will really enhance the cylinder walls so that you don't have any galling of the aluminum piston to the cylinder walls. No scuffing will occur. And then we've got a synthetic polymeric ceramic coating that we put on the top of the pistons. And even though it is super thin, I mean, it's only 1.5 thousandths thick, it actually reflects heat so that you develop more flame propagation over the top of the piston, better burn, but you don't get destructive heat into the piston that can actually,
damage the head.
Change the Burnell hardness or actually lose structural integrity. There's the first two pieces. If I was rebuilding a motor and trying to enhance the livelihood of it down the road. Now, there's all kinds of different parts in that engine that you could do things to change the dynamics of the motor. We've got a coating you could put on the counterweights of the crankshaft and the connecting rod, which will shed oil. Oil won't stick to those surfaces anymore. That reduces parasitic drag, and you then actually are starting to change the efficiency of the motor because it's not having to work massive oil on the rotating assembly anymore.
Wow, that's really cool. So really you talk about the application, what you're looking for, and you can start at one place and then just go from mild to crazy, depending on how far you want to go.
Yeah, you can coat the cylinder heads. You can put a ceramic coating in the combustion chamber and the face of the valves. Put a coating on the backside of the exhaust valve. You won't burn the exhaust valve. Put a coating on the backside of the intake valve, and it flows better air. Depending on the old motors, I'm not so prone to wanting to coat the intake runners because they don't have what I'd call airspeed. They're slow motors.
Yeah.
But we've got coatings for the intake manifolds. It depends entirely on, you know, what do you want it to look like? We can do decorative materials that are super, super tough. At the same time, say you're doing a small block Chevrolet. Well, the bottom side of the manifold, it sees hot engine oil because it sits in the valley between the two heads. Well, that hot oil will affect the air temperature of the air coming into the motor. So if you insulate the bottom of the intake manifold, you've got a cooler, denser air charge, which the motor absolutely loves it. So there's different things. I've coated carburetors so they don't corrode anymore, make them look stock. I've got a couple of guys that are just wizards at taking old carburetors and make them look like new, and they perform even better than new. And then of course you got your, say you got a Chevrolet there and you want to keep your ram horn manifolds. Well, we can coat them, make them look as good as the rest of the thing. We've painted the blocks. We've painted the valve covers, and we don't just use your run of the mill paints. We use some really, dynamic. It's called aliphatic urethane, and it stands up to temperature, stands up to fluids. In other words, if you get oil all over it, just wipe it off. If you get brake fluid on certain things, man, it's almost like paint remover, but it won't phase this stuff. I know you wouldn't expect to have your motor exposed to sunlight, but let's say you had a roadster and it would be exposed. This stuff's got fabulous UV resistance. So there's all kinds of interesting materials that we mess with on a daily basis so that the customer's parts can be put back on the car, and he really doesn't worry about it anymore. I mean, he can focus on so many other things, but now he's got a very good running, consistent power plant. We had a young man last week bring in the core support, radiator core support for an SS Monte Carlo he's restoring. And of course, it's got age on it, a little rust and everything. So he says, man, can you make it look nice like it just came off the showroom floor? I said, no problem, son. So we blasted it all the white metal. We're actually going to put a black ceramic coating on it. And there's no telling how long this thing will last. The bumper support, which is nothing but formed aluminum, we're going to put a silver ceramic on there. And it appears he's going to be a very detailed individual when it comes to getting this car, so that when he has it finished and he can take it to wherever he wants to show it off, it'll look like it just rolled off the showroom floor.
Carl, as we're running out of time, real quick question. Let's say somebody has a turbocharger from the 80s, you know, the ones that only lasted about 30,000 miles before they blew up. The warranty was only 12,000 miles, so the car companies didn't really care. But you've got a turbo and you want to put it back stock. You don't want to put an aftermarket, late model turbo on it or something like that. I can go through and take the guts out of it and send it to you and make it live, can't I?
We've got something for every piece of the turbo so that we can enhance not just the bushing bearings, but the compressor and the hot wheel in it, the compressor housing, the exhaust housing, the center section, the heat shields inside of it, totally changing the dynamics of the turbo in a very positive way. But more than anything, it'll stay looking nice for a longer
than we'll be around.
Yeah. How's that? We've got a turbo shop just 3 miles down the shop, Third Coast Turbos. And I take every one of the turbos that customers bring in. I give it to them. They disassemble it. They decide if the bushings are worth reusing. They look at everything, make sure it's up to their standards, and thank goodness they got high standards. We coat it. They balance everything, the rotating assembly, put it all back together, make it nice and smooth. They throw their warranty on it and give it back to the customer. And we're seeing more and more, not just from cars, but even these big diesel trucks are bringing turbos because, let's face it, If the turbo goes out, you just lost all the power.
Yep, that's it. Carl, we're running out of time. Your website is?
www.polydyne.com.
Polydyne.com. Carl, thanks for joining us again today, and I know we'll have you back again.
Anytime. Love to do it.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in this segment of the podcast. Now we're going to have a bonus car review from Matt Perrault, host of the Bostonian Versus the Book podcast, and we'll be right back with that right after this break.